This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, the long-awaited report from the House Select Committee on Benghazi was released earlier today. Although the White House refused to provide critical information regarding the terrorist attack and the administration's non-response, new facts did come to light. FRC's Executive Vice President, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, who was instrumental in getting the House leadership to create the Select Committee, will give us an overview of the report in just a moment. Also, two members of the Select Committee, Congressman Jim Jordan and Mike Pompeo, provided an additional report that, in their words, quote, highlights those facts and conclusions uncovered by our investigation that we consider most important to a full understanding of the tragedy that is Benghazi, end quote. One of those members, Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio, will join us later with his take on the committee's work. And a new survey from the Barna Group shows that Americans, including religious Americans, think cohabitation before marriage is a good idea. Unfortunately, the facts don't back that idea up. Syndicated columnist and president of Marriage Savers, Mike McManus, will join us to explain. The website is TonyPerkins.com. Let me remind you, coming up September the 9th and the 10th is the Values Voter Summit. Great lineup of speakers. Conservatives from across the country will gather in Washington, D.C. for 2 days prior to what could be one of the most critical elections in our nation's history. To find out more how you can be a part of it, I'll save you a seat, but you got to move quickly. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right, if you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me at T. Perkins. Okay, after 2 years, 81 witnesses, 75,000 pages of evidence, the House Select Benghazi Committee issued an 800-page report today on the attack and response in Benghazi, Libya. While the report reiterated known facts, like the false narrative of the White House and Hillary Clinton that a YouTube video was responsible for inciting a demonstration that erupted into the attack, which is laughable, there was also new information, though, that was made available about the timeline and the reasons that U.S. military personnel were not deployed to rescue the four Americans that were killed in Benghazi. Joining me now with his analysis on the report is FRC's Executive Vice President, a founding member of the Army Delta Force after spending 36 and a half years in the Army. General Boykin, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, I want to get your initial take on the report.
Well, as an American, I'm both angry and extremely disappointed in how this whole thing went down. I think this report is very revealing, but I don't think the report is complete. I think there's still information that has not been brought out in this report here, and so I'm a little disappointed in that regard.
Now, it's kind of hard for anyone to pull the wool over your eyes on this topic. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, you met with House leadership a few years ago and encouraged them to move in this direction, and working with former Congressman Frank Wolf helped get this committee in place. You also have served in some of the military units that could have responded to Benghazi, so you know what was available to the administration to go to the defense and rescue of these four Americans. And what we're told about those units is just not holding up.
No, it's not, Tony. But here's what's important for people to understand. Panetta actually testified before the committee that he had ordered the deployment of three organizations. One was the Marine Corps Fleet Anti-Terrorism Support Team, which was located in Rota, Spain. He also ordered the deployment of the Sink In Extremist Force, which was located at that time in Croatia. And then he actually ordered the deployment of the Delta Force out of Fort Bragg, North Carolina. And none of them deployed. None of them deployed. So he says he ordered the deployment, but none of them deployed. However, if you go back to the secure video teleconference that was held between 7:30 p.m. and 9:30 on the evening of the attack. What you find is that the report shows that they use terms like, and I am quoting from the report, if any deployment is made, that's an if any deployment is made, and Libya must agree to any deployment, and we will not deploy until orders come to go either to either Tripoli or Benghazi. Now, what that's saying is that they put the sensitivities of the Libyans ahead of the lives of these four Americans that ultimately died, and certainly the safety of those that were injured there. This I find absolutely incredible. Tony, I've done this many times. What is supposed to occur is the moment you have this kind of crisis, the theater commander moves on his own authority his forces as close to the scene of the incident as possible under his own authority. And then he waits for a final execution order from the Secretary of Defense based on agreement by the president. I cannot find in this report where any of those procedures were followed. The only thing that I can find that is just absolutely clear is that nothing was going to happen unless the Libyans approved it. And that is not the way that, as a nation, that we should respond to an incident like this.
So, as I understand this, General Boykin, when the report came back to Washington that this attack was occurring, the president and his advisors gathered. They discussed the situation. The president did give direction to Panetta to rescue those Americans and use the military. But at the same time, he communicated to the State Department that we would not take military action unless the Libyan government signed off on it. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm sure that during the time that they were having this meeting, it would have included the president, the State Department, Leon Panetta, the Defense Department, the National Security Advisor, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, or representatives from each of those entities. And they would have developed a concept. And part of what I just read you with regards to getting Libyan concurrence or Libyan approval would have come out of that meeting. So the parameters were set. The rules of the game were laid down during that meeting. And then they were to be followed by everybody else. So naturally, it would have required the State Department to go to the Libyan government and ask for their concurrence to run a rescue to save Americans that were under fire. That doesn't make sense, Tony. That does not make any sense to me, and it's not the procedure that I've seen followed multiple times over my 36 and a half years in the military.
So we essentially, in this case, gave the Libyan government, which we had just toppled the previous government, we had given them veto authority over a rescue operation of Americans.
That's right. And the question is, you can call it whatever you want to. You know, we've heard a lot about stand down. But the reality is, not authorizing them to go is exactly the same thing. The outcome is the same as a stand down. You have no military force there to effect a rescue. And I find this just incredible that those people expected that if they got in trouble, that somebody would come. Their government would respond and somebody would come. But in this case, because this just destroyed the Obama administration's narrative of the prudence of going into Libya to begin with and ultimately resulting in the death of Muammar Gaddafi, and the narrative that said that al-Qaeda is on the ropes, that we've got al-Qaeda just about defeated, and here you have an attack that is an al-Qaeda affiliate that is attacking American interests there. And what they're thinking about is, how do we not offend the Libyans and how do we maintain the integrity of this narrative that we've been spreading to the American public? And it resulted in the death of four people that to their dying breath probably expected somebody from their government to respond. Okay, this is this report is something that everybody should read. I think this report is very revealing on a variety of issues. Remember that you have the All the activities that occurred before the event, then you have the activities that occurred during the event, and then you have the activities that occurred after the event. Before the event, there were repeated calls for increased security. They saw what was happening. They were reading the intel reports. They were looking at everything that was indicating that there was going to be some kind of attack on 9/11. And those warnings were ignored, and those requests from the ambassador himself were actually ignored. So what we have is a State Department that refused to honor requests from their own ambassador that they had put there in good faith.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. My guest, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, discussing the long-awaited report out of the House Select Benghazi Committee that was released today, 800 pages. New information coming out of this, of course, reiterating some of the facts that we already knew that have come to light over the last 4 years. But, General, when you look at this in its totality, when you look at this report, and I know you're still digesting parts of it, there was a... I mean, this was a major breach in not just protocol, but the fact that we never leave Americans behind. And this sends a tragic, I think, message to Americans who are in situations that are dangerous and that are representing American interest. I think in the back of their mind is a question, will my government stand behind me?
Tony, that's absolutely true, and I've said this before, but let me repeat it. You know, William Tecumseh Sherman wrote a letter to Ulysses S. Grant when he came out of the campaign up in Tennessee, and he said, "I knew wherever I was that you thought of me, and if I got in a tight spot, you would come if alive." And you've seen that in my office, Tony. I keep that up in, you know, on a platform in my office because it's an American ethos. It's an American value. And we violated that. And look, I spent most of my career in the Delta Force, and our mission was to go when the call came, and to go into unknown circumstances, to go wherever there were Americans under duress, and do all we could to include risking our lives to bring those Americans home because it was an American value that was represented by that kind of attitude, and that's why this is so appalling.
And according to the report, and I'm going to talk with Congressman Jim Jordan, who along with Congressman Mike Pompeo did an additional report, it suggests that politics played a key role in the decisions of this administration.
I think indeed it did.
All right. General Jerry Boykin, as always, great to have you with us. Thank you for your insight on this report.
Thank you.
All right. That was General Jerry Boykin. Still to come, Congressman Jim Jordan joins us. He, as I mentioned, was a part of an additional report highlighting the facts that they thought most pertinent to the decisions, or lack thereof, made by the administration. He's going to join us next to talk about the report. Also, we're going to be talking about a new survey by the Barna Group saying that a majority of Americans, almost two-thirds, say cohabitation is a good idea. Is it? We're going to talk about it. Don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch after this.
Did you know that the Arlington National Cemetery was originally built during the Civil War? That's right. It was the home of Robert E. Lee, actually, who was the general of the Confederacy. Little known fact about the Arlington National Cemetery, which today is an iconic tribute to our fallen heroes. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We'll visit the Arlington National Cemetery in September on our spiritual heritage tour, as well as going to many other sites in our nation's capital. We'll also go to the home of George Washington, Mount Vernon. In addition, Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown will be a place we visit just prior to our nation's capital. So if you'd like to go on either of these tours in September, or both, we welcome you to find out all the information at the website spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber, president, co-founder of 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope was meant to be a one-time trip to Bay St. Louis, Waveland, Mississippi after Hurricane Katrina, and then God got involved. And since then, we have been to 9 different states, rebuilt 1,700 homes, and it's all because we love Jesus. God tells us to love Him and love others, and that's what we do, either through 8 Days of Hope or a new ministry called Hope Reigns. Hope Reigns goes immediately after a disaster, a tornado, a flood, a fire, a snowstorm. But what we noticed with disasters is right after disaster, there's so many ministry opportunities. We've already been to New York, Illinois, Tennessee, Texas. So if someone's interested in 8 Days of Hope or Hope Reigns, the best place to go is our website, 8daysofhope.com. And even though we might not have an event planned the day you go to the website, if you give us your email address on our website, we'll be able to contact you about future events.
Back in 07, my father passed away. My mother had passed away 7 years earlier, and they left me a small inheritance, and I wanted to give back to AFA for all they have done for me.
Carol talks about her experience with the AFA Foundation.
I am an avid listener to AFR, 12 hours a day, and I hear Dan Celia talking about the charitable gift annuity. I liked what the gift annuity offered, donated a certain amount, and from that, I get a check every month, which is retirement income for me.
If you'd like to support the work of the AFA and receive a fixed income for life, a charitable gift annuity from the AFA Foundation may just be what you're looking for. Learn more by contacting the Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. By the way, Dr. Ronnie Floyd will be in for me on Thursday and Friday. I'll be speaking at an event down in Texas. Then I'll be actually with Dr. Floyd at Cross Church in Springdale, Arkansas on Sunday for their 4th of July services. So if you're in the area, come out and join us. We'll be actually at multiple locations. To find out more, go to crosschurch.com. That's Dr. Ronnie Floyd at Cross Church. And as I said, he'll be filling in for me on Thursday and Friday. All right, we've been discussing the final report by the House Select Benghazi Committee released earlier today. And sadly, as the general said, we haven't even scratched the surface of what's in this 800-page report. And there's even more, I believe, beyond that. But going further, we were reminded that several security requests by the ambassador, Chris Stevens, had been ignored, a move that cost the lives of 4 Americans, including the ambassador himself. An additional report released by Congressmen Jim Jordan and Mike Pompeo asked the State Department to respond to why they ignored multiple requests for help from the team in Benghazi, leaving them to fend for themselves in a facility that was no match for a well-organized assault. It wasn't a demonstration based on a video. We know that for certain. It was a well-organized, well-trained group of terrorists attacking an American compound. Joining me now is a member of the House Select Committee on Benghazi. He represents the 4th Congressional District of Ohio. He's also the chairman of the Freedom Caucus. And he and Congressman Pompeo did this additional report, and he joins us now to discuss it. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you today, Tony.
Well, 2 years of hard work come to fruition today with this report. I want to first ask you to explain why you and Congressman Pompeo did an additional report on top of that which the committee did.
Yeah, the full report is lengthy, it's comprehensive, it's the what happened, it's the facts, and details about those facts. But we also felt that in addition to what happened, we needed to cover why it happened. Talk about the motive for the actions that took place. Why did they ignore the request to provide additional security in Benghazi? Why was America still there when almost every other country had decided to leave because the situation was so dangerous? You know, why did we stay there when a security agent talked about how it was a suicide mission and how another agent had said everybody in Benghazi is going to die if the security situation was so bad? Why did it take so long for the military to even start to move towards Benghazi and never even actually started moving there until after the attack was over, never even getting to Benghazi, only to get to Tripoli and why did they mislead the American people? And when you ask those why questions, the facts rather strongly, very strongly show that it was political considerations that that overtook everything else. And so we felt it's important to not just present the facts, but present the facts and show why those decisions were made and what was going on. And that's what we did in our report.
Now let's talk, there's so much to try to unpack in this, but let's take a few of them. First, why did we not pull out of Benghazi, Libya, when everybody else was?
Because this was their crown jewel of foreign policy. I mean, this was supposed to be how it works. You know, you can overthrow a dictator, you can help with the Arab Spring, you can do it without putting boots on the ground. This is how the Clinton State Department, the Obama administration, foreign policy works, and they were so invested in this that it didn't matter about the security posture, that there were 200 security incidents that took place leading up to Benghazi, to the terrorist attack. It didn't matter because this was their big deal. Remember what Sidney Blumenthal sent an email to Secretary Clinton a couple days after Gaddafi is ousted in the summer of 2011. In that email, he closes off by saying, "This is a big moment for you. You are vindicated, but don't wait. Help Cleo now." And Cleo is a reference to the goddess of history. So he's saying, this is historic. This is a huge moment. You need to recognize that and go to a press conference and talk about it. They were invested in this in spite of the fact that the security situation was so bad. And then 9/11 happened. And then they get a terrorist attack. And they're just 56 days before an election. Their legacy is on the line. And she's got the, quote, goddess of history looking over her shoulder. They can't tell the truth. They got to mislead the American people, and that's exactly what they did with this video narrative.
Well, I don't know if it's a goddess of history or the demons of the narrative that this administration seems to follow. I mean, this is very similar to ISIS being called the JV team, that because it doesn't fit with the narrative that they've created, they basically lie, and as a result, people die.
Yeah. Remember, I think maybe someone asked, what's the key takeaway? One of the key takeaways, I think, is that no military asset that was put in motion ever took off, ever even took off until the attack was over. But what did launch before the attack was over was the political spin. Never forget that at 10:08 on the night of the attack, there's a statement on Benghazi put out by the State Department that becomes the official statement of our government. And this is where Secretary Clinton says, some have sought to justify this vicious behavior as a response to inflammatory material on the Internet. Going to the video right away. Going to the video while Tyrone Woods is still on the roof of the annex fighting for his life. And we know that was a misleading statement because later that night she tells her daughter, terrorists killed two of our people. And probably more importantly, the very next day she tells the Egyptian prime minister, we know the film had nothing to do with it. It was a planned attack, not a protest. And they kept this contrasting public versus private narrative, publicly spinning this story about it being a video-inspired protest leading to an attack, but privately telling the truth that it was a terrorist attack. So that continued for several days, and they did that again because they had political considerations that they were focused on just 8 weeks before an election, and the narrative out there that GM's alive, Bin Laden's dead, now Qaeda's on the run.
But they had to know that eventually the truth would catch up to them.
Well, you know, they ran with this, and they ran with this, and it's very clear. I think one of the things we've added in that I think is brought to the debate and brought out in the open is this idea that this narrative, how pervasive it was, privately right. telling the truth, publicly telling the American people a completely different story.
And it completely undermines the credibility of this administration. But beyond it undermines the credibility of government in general. Congressman, thank you so much for being with us. As always, appreciate talking to you. And we'll continue to unpack this, I'm sure, in the days ahead.
Thank you. Take care, brother.
All right. Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Our government lies and Americans die. All right, when we come back, we're going to shift gears here, look at a new survey by the Barna Group. Don't go away. Mike McManus is with us when we return.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, the last look at GDP came in, and we've got first quarter GDP at 1.1%. 1.1%, a whopping 1.1%. Not even close to where we need to be. That is a big step backwards. Look, when we look at the demographic changes in our population growth, we understand that we need at least a 2.8% GDP growth on a regular basis just to maintain what we have. Not to get better, not to improve, just to keep where we are. Obviously, we haven't done that in a very long time. We have had an average of 2.1% GDP growth. That is going to be this president's legacy for over 50 years leading up to the financial crisis. We had a 3.6% annual average GDP growth. So you can see the dramatic change and difference. Now, if we want to take the population back to 1977, along with the labor participation rate, it wouldn't be so bad. But unfortunately, we can't do that. We're still looking at very tepid, at best, economic growth continuing to be the story of the day in the economy. It looks like we are recovering and going to recover a bit this week from the Brit exit. We'll watch the markets closely.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. All right, a new survey by the Barna Group reveals that a majority, actually two-thirds of Americans, think cohabitating or living together before marriage is a good idea. The vast majority, 84% of them, say that they think it's a good idea because it's a good compatibility test for marriage. Now, those who think their future marriage will benefit from a test drive may soon realize they've taken a turn down a dead-end street. Joining me now with his analysis on these numbers from Barna is the president of Marriage Savers and syndicated columnist Mike McManus. Mike, welcome to Washington Watch.
I appreciate you putting a spotlight on this, Tony.
Well, Mike, I know you have long talked about this issue and the problems the social science reveals are contained within cohabitation. What is what's your thought on this survey?
Well, last year, according to the census, 8.3 million couples were cohabiting, but only 1.4 million of them got married. Well, what happened to the other nearly 7 million who didn't marry? Well, most broke up, and on average, after about 15 months. The number of cohabiting couples, however, has soared from about 450,000 in 1960 to this 8.3 million. It's an 18-fold increase, and marriages seem less and less relevant. However, our marriage rate has fallen 57% since 1970. We had about 2 million couples who married in 2015, less than the 2.16 million who married in 1970, when the population was only 203 million. If we had the same percentage of people getting married today as we did in 1970, there should have been 3.4 million marriages, not 2 million marriages.
Mm-hmm. Now, some would say, Mike, well, you know, that's why it's a good compatibility test. It just doesn't work so these people don't get married. But that doesn't necessarily work that way, does it?
No. It's a poor compatibility test. One marriage educator put it this way. You can't practice permanence. Marriage is a permanent commitment. Cohabitation is an impermanent commitment. And therefore, each person in the cohabiting relationship is not really trying to make the relationship work to the extent that a couple in a marriage is trying to make it work.
Right, and so a lot of these
poor test.
Right, so a lot of these cohabitating couples they break up, they split, they try it again, and so you have these serial cohabitation relationships. But in the process, sometimes you have children that come along. And
well, that's what's particularly awful, because we only had about 5% of our children born out of wedlock in 1960. It's now about 40%. And the reason is that so many couples who are cohabiting are having children. In fact, the government actually pays them to do so. The woman says, oh, yes, I have a baby. And so they start giving her Medicaid and welfare and food stamps and things like that. But she has the benefit of her partner's income as if she were married. I don't think she should be receiving any public
So the government actually discourages the non-construction of a marriage and a family with its social programs.
Discourages marriage. That's right.
Right, it does.
It's paying people not to marry. Now, what I've proposed is that a governor of a certain state say, we believe in marriage here. We don't believe in living together. And we're going to tell all the couples who are living together, if you marry, we're going to continue your benefits for 2 years.
Right.
So you have a reason to actually marry. That's the best thing for you and for your children.
And it rewards, it's a positive reinforcement of good behavior as opposed to the opposite. We're almost out of time.
As of a certain date, we're not going to give these benefits to cohabiting couple who's not married.
We're down to a minute, and I want to ask you one question, because one aspect of this was troubling, where you saw a number of, quote-unquote, religious Americans, Christians, who say they're okay with cohabitation.
Well, but they don't know these numbers, and the reason is that their pastors haven't preached on it. I blame the church for its failure to make clear that cohabitation is a disaster from a point of view of the couples. And the church should say, we want you to remain chaste until you marry. But even if you don't remain chaste, we want to help you to create a marriage that's going to go the distance. And my wife and I have mentored 51 couples who were sexually active when we started working with them. And we asked them to sign a covenant they would remain chaste from now to the wedding. 43 out of 51 couples signed it. And we don't know of any couples who divorced who we've prepared for marriage.
And this is not just your opinion. This is what the social science and the statistics bear out, that cohabitation does not lead to permanence in a relationship. So if you're looking for security and you're looking for the long term, this is not the route.
In fact, couples who cohabit and marry are more likely to divorce than those who remain separate.
If they tie the knot.
Sociology bears out scripture.
How about that? It's an amazing thing. Mike McManus, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
All right, Mike McManus, syndicated columnist and president of Marriage Savers. It's a ministry that focuses on mentoring couples. He mentioned that. It's a good ministry. And it's a great way to help young couples in your church navigate the early years of marriage successfully by having mentoring couples. All right, to find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. When we return, we're going to go to the phone lines. And here's my question for you. Given what we heard earlier from the Benghazi report, does this further undermine your trust in the government? We're going to talk about that here on Washington Watch when we return. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
Do you enjoy history, museums, pandas, and national monuments? And are you looking to gain work experience at a Christian organization in the heart of our nation's capital? If the answer is yes, come spend a semester as an intern in Washington, D.C. with the Family Research Council. You will get a chance to experience the rich history and culture of our nation's capital and attend congressional hearings, events, rallies, and lectures all over D.C. Further, you will develop your skills in research and writing about the sanctity of life, marriage and family, religious liberty, and many other policy issues. Family Research Council's internship program includes free housing just a block away from Capitol Hill and the Supreme Court, as well as a paid stipend. As an intern, you will gain invaluable public policy experience in a professional work environment under the oversight and mentorship of FRC experts and scholars. To learn more and apply to the program, visit frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships.
It's our first liberty, freedom of religion. An easy way to show your support for the First Amendment is with the Freedom of Religion buttons from the American Family Association. They're conversation starters and demonstrate what it means to have religious freedom in America. They're also a way to bring attention to how the First Amendment is under assault today. It needs support now more than ever. Get a pack of Freedom of Religion buttons at afastore.net.
The Decision America Tour with Franklin Graham.
I'm traveling to all 50 states to hold prayer rallies. We're asking Christians to take a stand and pray and engage in your community by living and sharing your faith at home, in public, and at the ballot box. And I'm going to be sharing the gospel.
You'll find rally dates and locations, plus information on how you can be involved at DecisionAmericaTour.com.
Now is the time to take a stand.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger. A group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
No, that's not right. 866-372-7234. Yes, it is right. Didn't sound right. 866-372-7234, the number to call to get on the conversation. Here's the question for you. Given what the Benghazi report reveals, does this further undermine your trust in government? 866-372-7234. Let me again remind you that the Values Voter Summit coming up September the 9th and the 10th in Washington, D.C. You can be a part of it. Great lineup of speakers. Dr. Bill Bennett will be the recipient of this year's Leadership Award from the Family Research Council. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. Also, while you're there, just a reminder that we have folks across the country partnering with us that make this broadcast possible. You can be one of those partners. Just sign up as a supporter of the Family Research Council and Washington Watch right there at the website, tonyperkins.com. All right, 866-372-7234. Again, I just want to get your thoughts on this as whether or not we now see from this 800-page report clear evidence that this administration intentionally misled the American people. They lied, and as a result, Americans died. And this is not a one-time narrative, as I pointed out. This is the same thing you said about the ISIS being a JV team. It's because it didn't fit with their narrative that their foreign policy was working, when in fact their foreign policy was failing horribly, horribly. All right, let's go to Arkansas, where David is on the line. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Good afternoon, Tony.
How you doing?
Well, I'm better than I deserve. I think this Benghazi deal is just one more nail in the coffin of our current government, and there's getting to be so many nails in it now they won't be able to lift it up to the backhoe, set it to the ground. But I would also like to know what in the world has happened to Craig James.
Well, he's still in Texas. I hadn't talked to him in a while. He's been working on a few sports projects. I'll have to get him back on and give us an update on what he's been working on. He was involved in, I think, you know, a legal suit with Fox sports, and I think got that resolved, and I think he's working on a couple other deals. But we'll get him back on. David, thanks so much for listening and for calling in. You know, the problem with this, though, is, yes, it does undermine the credibility of this administration, which, you know, if their lips are moving, you know they're lying. But beyond that, the troubling part about this is that this has a residual effect. It undermines the credibility of government, regardless of whose administration it is, going forward. You know, once, you know, there's a breach of trust between the government, the American government, and the American people, it's hard to recover. I mean, we're still dealing with the effects of Watergate. And look, I'm not partisan. That was a Republican administration. You know, this has long-term consequences. All right, let's go to Virginia, where Karen is on the line. Karen, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi. Thank you, Charlie. Good to talk to you.
Glad you're listening. What are your thoughts?
Well, a couple of things. You just mentioned Watergate. I think my concern about the difference in this situation and that one is that, unfortunately, most of the particularly Democratic voters or independents that are stuck on the fence are never going to hear this. They're not going to hear this information because they're certainly not going to tune in and look for it. And that concerns me. I am not a Donald Trump supporter. I really have been on the fence in terms of absolutely not wanting to vote for Hillary. But I just don't care for Mr. Trump, and I'm very concerned. But after this report, I really can't. I can't not vote, which is kind of where I was leaning, in a very guilty kind of way.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're not, Karen. I don't think you're alone. I think a lot of people are in that category. But I think as you look at this report and the fact that Hillary Clinton was dead center in the events surrounding Benghazi. This was her deal over there, Libya. She was a part of this whole process with the president going toppling Gaddafi and setting up this new government. And so they were locked into this for political purposes. And as a result, Americans died. If our leaders are going to make decisions based on politics, and they're going to let even their own friends, you know, like an ambassador, die to protect their political narrative, they're not going to give a second thought to the American people. So you're right. I think we got to think long and hard. I mean, yesterday we had the Supreme Court decision on Texas's abortion clinic regulation act, and we see the consequences of the court, an activist court. That hangs in the balance. National security, as we see today from this Benghazi report, that also is a factor. Karen, thanks for listening. Appreciate you calling in today. 866-372-7234. And let's go to John in Illinois. John, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony, for having me on.
Well, John, what are your thoughts? This undermine the trust you have in your government?
Oh, yeah. The more I listen to your show and the more I listen to Brian Fisher and all of the other associates in American Family Radio, it sheds light on how severe the problems are in America. You know, the Supreme Court, you really can't blame the Supreme Court because look what our leader's doing. They're saying, well, look what our leader's doing. Well, yeah. If he can get away with it, then, you know, let's see what we can get away with.
Yeah, absolutely right. And that's a part of the lawlessness. And see, that's the trickle-down effect. You know, the Democrats used to talk about, you know, the President Bush's trickle-down economics and Reagan's trickle-down economics. Look, they have their trickle-down corruption, lawlessness. And it starts at the very top, and it really is fraying the fabric of society, and it's going to have long-term consequences. Now, you know, you don't want to exacerbate the situation, but you've got to put a spotlight on it. This is why we have to have leaders that are trustworthy. It's going to take a long time, if it's possible, to rebuild trust in the American government. Now, this coming in from Twitter, it is not possible to further undermine my trust in government. Unfortunately, they're probably not alone. The findings further undermine my trust in Democrats running any part of any government. Look, again, we're talking about Hillary Clinton, and she is going to be the standard bearer for the Democratic Party. And she's right in the middle of it. She cannot wash her hands of Benghazi, Libya. All right, going to work in a few more calls here. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Arkansas where John is on the line. John, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it. I looked at this thing, and, you know, if your confidence can't get less than zero, I'd have to go into negative numbers, and it's already zero. So, you know, it really doesn't do anything except make me more disappointed and disheartened in what our leaders are doing. If they really wanted to do something about fixing the economy, they would not give themselves a raise until they get things in check and get the economy balanced and stop going in debt. If they cared about the country, they'd have borrowing money to pay themselves more money.
And well, it's a good point, John, on the debt. I mean, we're now up to $19 trillion, bumping up there to $19 trillion in debt. That is like a ball and chain on our economy. And it's actually worse than a ball and chain because it's like a time bomb as well. Because as soon as interest rates go up and the government stops printing this, free money, interest rates go up. I mean, it's going to consume what discretionary spending Congress has access to, and it's going to have. It's hard to even envision just the impact that could have on the families of America, and it's irresponsible. A lot of it's being done just so politicians can get reelected. John, thanks for the call. All right, let's go to Kansas where Marilyn is on the line. Marilyn, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. I was asked if this has lowered my opinion of the government. I don't know whether it could go much lower. I have just read a book about Hillary Clinton, and it covered quite a bit about Benghazi. Going back before the attack, Hillary declared war herself on Libya, especially on the leader, Gaddafi. It's my understanding from this book that Gaddafi had tons and tons of weaponry, and Hillary lusted after that weaponry. She arranged for that all that arsenal to be stolen from Libya. It was put on a ship, went to Turkey. From Turkey, it went to the rebels in Syria. Mm-hmm. And that is really where ISIS started.
In the name, what's the name of that book, Marilyn?
Crowning Clinton.
Okay. Yeah, there is so much involved in Libya and the how weapons were transferred to Syria and all this is a lot. But this, again, the fact that they knowingly lied to the American people and it's, of course, we've known this part about the video, that's been known, but the fact that they said that they were moving military assets to rescue these Americans. Panetta said three times that various units that they ordered to be deployed. But at the same time, they had given the Libyan government veto authority. So we're not going to move until they give approval. I mean, that's the president could have and should have said, I don't care what the Libyan government says. We're going to go in and we're going to rescue those four Americans, or however many were alive at the time they finally made the decision. And I would, he should have said, look, as soon as you hit Libyan airspace, you tell them you're there and to back off. But that's not what they did. They let the Libyan government, a government that they had just basically set up, decide the fate of four Americans who were being attacked by terrorists. All right, let's quickly go to Virginia, where Michelle is on the line. Michelle, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Thank you for taking my call. I think as far as my discontent with our government, that's pretty clear. But I think now's the time for us to act. Now's the time for us to stop bickering over whether we like, hate, tolerate Trump and start focusing on the opposition, start focusing on the greater evil, and this is an excellent chance to try.
Well, there's certainly plenty of ammunition provided by, they provided, you know, talk about Hillary taking weapons from Gaddafi, if that's the case. They provided us plenty when it comes to what they have done in this administration and not putting American interest first, but rather playing politics. So, Michelle, I think you're absolutely right. Although I have communicated this and I have said this and I will continue to say this, and I say it from a historical perspective, and it is not enough for Republicans to count on scaring people to the polls with a vision of what America would look like under Hillary Clinton. Rather, I think we're going to have a candidate, that is Donald Trump, is going to have to cast a vision that will inspire Americans to go to the polls. Yes, we've got to look at what the alternative is under a Hillary Clinton. But we also, you know, and I think part of that is seen in his statement, make America great again. But how's he going to do that? I think that's important. And that's not just the presidential race. That's every race, whether it's a congressional race, a Senate race, a state legislative race, a local government race, is we have a great opportunity, I believe, to cast a contrasting vision of America's future. It's dark, and I think you don't have to say a whole lot to remind people of the darkness of the hour, whether we're talking economy, whether we're talking culture, spiritual, political. Look, we're seeing things happen that most people never thought they would see. America can be great again, but to borrow from de Tocqueville, for America to be great again, America's going to have to be good again. And that's the role of the church, spreading the gospel of Jesus Christ and living it out each and every day. You can be a part of that. All right, folks, thanks so much for tuning in. Lord willing, we'll be back tomorrow, and I hope you will as well, and invite somebody else to join in. Until then, remember the words of the Apostle Paul, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.